Coming up, continuing my NBA entertainment rankings with the Suns and the Pelicans, and then talking about some of the latest news. Welcome back to the Kevin O'Connor Show. We're going to continue today with my NBA entertainment rankings before discussing some of the latest news later today. Just to recap so far, number 30, I had the Brooklyn Nets as the least entertaining team to monitor this season. Then number 29, the Milwaukee Bucks. Number 28, the Sacramento Kings. Number 27, the Phoenix Suns. My formerly known as the Bright Future Suns, then they were the Bleak Present Suns. Now the Suns are just kind of there. They're just kind of in the middle. They're sort of boring, to be totally honest with you about Phoenix right now. But I do think there are some potentially interesting trends to watch with them this year after they had a very interesting offseason. They traded Grayson Allen and Royce O'Neal away to go get Miles Bridges. They took Koa Pete at the end of the first round, trading up to get him. They brought back Mark Williams, Colin Gillespie. They also brought back Jordan Goodwin. They added Luke Kennard to replace Grayson Allen as their shooting specialist on the team. And Phoenix's depth chart is, you know, it's solid. Devin Booker, still your star player. A bunch of wings, bigs as well. Kaman Malawach, we'll talk about in a little bit. But I do want to start with reasons to watch the Suns. And I think the number one clear reason involves Devin Booker. Because Devin Booker last year posted his lowest effective field goal percentage since his third season in the league. And so that's back when the Suns sucked. That's back with my buddy of the show, Nate Duncan, used to say Devin Booker was not a real star, didn't have great upside. There's skeptics of Booker back then. And last year, he was showing why there were skeptics of him. He didn't shoot as well from three. He didn't shoot as well from the rim as well. And I think the thing with Booker that I'm a little bit concerned about is the shooting aspect. He has the reputation as an elite shooter, but he's not. He shot 43% on catch and shoot threes way back in the 2021-22 season, 48% elite in 22-23. Since then, 37%, 36%, 37%. And what's the difference? No Chris Paul. When Chris Paul was there in Phoenix, Devin Booker was an elite shooter. Easier shot attempts, better offense. Ever since then, he's been, you know, okay, 37% isn't awful. I'm not saying he's a terrible shooter, but for a guy with the reputation of an elite knockdown shooter, a guy who'll be in three-point shooting contest, those numbers aren't at the level you would expect from a guy with that rep. And then at the real concerning part to me is his at-rim efficiency. His first 3 years of his career, according to Synergy Sports, he shot 56% at the rim. Not a great number, average. Next 7 years, 63%. He got significantly better. He got stronger. He got better finishing with either hand from tough angles. Last year, though, down to 56%. Is this just a blip? Is this because of the injuries? He had a groin injury, ankle issue, hip issue towards the end of the season. Is that what this is? Or is this the beginning of a slight decline? Because the year prior, he was down 59%. He dipped below 60 as well. So I think with Booker, you know, so much of the conversation about him, rightfully so, is about the money aspect. He's making $57 million this year, then $61 next year, and then that's before his extension kicks in, which is currently projected at $64 million for the 28-29 season when he'll be 32 years old, $69 million for the 29-30 season when he'll be 33. If Devin Booker doesn't improve from the guy that we saw last season, he has albatross contract potential. It has worst contract in the league potential if he does not improve from what we saw last season. If Devin Booker returns to the guy that helped lead the Suns to the NBA Finals, that was an elite shooter, that was very good at getting to the basket, that was elite for mid-range, that was a bona fide year-in, year-out, all-NBA player, that Devin Booker can be worth the money, and he has a roster around him that I think could be really, really good. And I think with Matt Ishbia, the Suns team owner, he had a quote at the Suns exit interviews back in April where he said, "I'll ride into a fire with Devin Booker. Devin Booker's not getting traded. We're going to win a championship here with Devin Booker." That could be true if Devin Booker returns to form and the rest of the Suns roster starts rounding into shape. But for now, we need Booker to get better and we need the roster to get better. And that leads to my second reason to watch the Suns. And we saw the reason this summer league, and that's Kaman Malawach. Does Kaman Malawach entering his second year in the NBA take over the center spot? I am a Mark Williams guy. I've long been a Mark Williams guy since he was in college, since he was a young player in Charlotte. I liked him when he was kind of sort of traded to the Lakers before the trade back, and I still like him now in Phoenix. But Kaman Malawach undeniably has higher potential, and we saw glimmers of that in Summer League when he was draining threes, banging down threes, looks stronger, still switchable on the perimeter, still can move his feet. He's a shot blocker. Can Kaman Malawach translate what we saw in July in Las Vegas to the NBA season? And if he does, he could be one of those rare centers who provides 7-foot size, shot protection at the rim, a little bit of switchability, and range on offense. If he can provide range from three and verticality at the rim, I think he's the type of player that can change the entire complexion of this Suns roster and, you know, vault them up the entertainment rankings. If Kaman Malawach can be a true franchise center for you, suddenly it changes what everything else looks like on this roster with Devin Booker as the star scorer, you know, guys like Jalen Green providing secondary scoring and Colin Gillespie with his really solid play as a playmaker and as a three-point shooter as well. And some of their bench guys, Luke Kennard with his shooting, Jordan Goodwin with his defense, and then the wings. The number three reason to watch the Phoenix Suns is their wing defense. Can Phoenix's wings just dominate on the defensive end of the floor? Dylan Brooks just got his contract extension that we talked about last week. Obviously, he's the big name of this bunch. They trade for Miles Bridges. He is obviously a very big name. He's not a stopper necessarily in the Dylan Brooks category, but he's a good defender who provides versatility and strength and size on top of his offense. I just look at the weights of these guys. Miles Bridges, 225. Dylan Brooks, 225. Chris Dunn, 216. Rashear Fleming, 250. Koa Pete, 245. These guys are huge. Big, long, rangy, strong wings. Five of them. Bridges, Brooks, Dunn, Fleming, Pete. That's more than any other team in the league in terms of having guys that big, that long, that versatile. Can they shoot? Can they provide enough spacing? Can they provide enough on offense? There's real questions there. But I am very curious with Phoenix when you look at the collective picture. Can Booker, Green, Gillespie provide the offense? Can Malawach provide the spacing? And then these wings, it would alleviate the pressure on them, particularly Bridges, Brooks, and Fleming, to have to shoot earlier in their careers. And so I think with the Suns, it's not a knock on them to have them 27th. I swear to God, Suns fans who are pissed at me, like Nets, Bucks, and Kings fans all are, for having them so low on the rankings. There's just a lot of interesting teams. I don't think the Suns are one of the more interesting ones at this current moment. And neither are the Pelicans at number 26. The Pelicans did nothing this summer. Nothing. Nothing. They signed training camp contracts to Kobe Bufkin, Christian Coloco, Caleb Houston, some busty players who have not panned out in the NBA so far. Maybe they work it out in New Orleans. They brought back DeAndre Jordan to a 2-year, $7.8 million contract, which on the surface, who cares? But it actually became pretty controversial on social media. If you're not familiar, it's controversial because of the second year of that contract. 10-plus year veteran players only count against the team salary cap for $2.5 million when they sign a 1-year deal. But since DeAndre Jordan signed a 2-year deal, they were disqualified from that subsidy. And so now the Pelicans are on the hook for the full salary and the full 2-year cap hit. And people, when that happened, said, oh, this is just another sign of Joe Dumars and that Pelicans front office not knowing what they're doing. Just like last year when they traded away the first round pick from the Pacers back to the Pacers during the finals before Halliburton ruptured his Achilles. And then they traded up for Derek Queen and yada, yada, yada. The Pelicans front office, according to the Steinline, claims that they felt like they had a bid for DJ. They had to outbid other teams. I don't know about that. I don't know about that. And I think the Pelicans, I mean, look, they're not a contender. Zion Williamson, he is exciting. He is a star, but I feel like that stardom has sort of faded in New Orleans. He just doesn't draw eyeballs in the way that the league thought he would, the way that I thought he would. The team's future, we'll see. The product on the floor, they weren't good last year. But I do think the Pelicans have a lot of chaos potential, and that does make them interesting. And that starts with number one here, the progress of Derek Queen. This is the guy that Joe Dumars invested a lot 1 year ago to move up and get. Queen, exciting offensive prospect out of Maryland. We saw him hit that game-winning, leaning floater in the tournament for Maryland. He's like a Jokic, baby Jokic, a Şengün, Sabonis type of big. He's in that category. The problem is he is just garbage on defense. He is so bad on the defensive end of the floor. 32 players last year defended at least 1,000 pick and rolls. The names you'd expect up top, Wemby's number one, Chet's number three. No surprises at the top of the league. Last place was Khalil Ware, formerly of the Miami Heat. Second to last was Derek Queen. He doesn't provide size. He doesn't provide switchability. He doesn't provide rim protection. And so you look at the Pelicans' numbers last year with Zion, Murphy, and Queen on the floor together. The Pelicans had a minus 9.1 net rating, and that was in part driven by a 125.2 defensive rating. With Zion and Murphy and no Derek Queen, just Zion and Murphy, the Pelicans had a plus 5.3 net rating, and that was driven by the improvement on the defensive end of the floor. They had a 119.3 offensive rating, a 114 defensive rating, 11.2 points better than the defensive rating with Zion plus Murphy and Queen. So I'm not out on Derek Queen. I'm not saying he's a bust. I'm not saying any of that, but the dude needs to get better. He's got to get better defensively. He's got to prove he can survive. He's got to prove he can offer more than Missy, who is a superior defensive player, but inferior potential offensively. Like, you signed DeAndre Jordan. Like, where are the lessons? Where's the teaching? I got to see it. And then not only that with Queen, 97 players last season took at least 700 shots. Second to last in effective field goal percentage was Derek Queen. So you have this big who's supposed to provide offense, and he hasn't. He can't get space to floor. His mid-range is average. He's not getting to the rim as often as he's like. He's not an explosive lob threat. Last place, by the way, Pelicans fans don't want to hear this. Last place was Jeremiah Fears. So the bottom two players of the 97 players that take at least 700 shots in effective field goal percentage were two Pelicans. Related to Jeremiah Fears is my second question. How does the New Orleans backcourt rotation shake out? DeJounte Murray came back from his torn Achilles last year. He's looked more like DeJounte Murray a lot sooner than I think I would have expected. Jeremiah Fears entering year two after a great end of last season. He was excellent to end the year, did enough to make one of my two all-rookie teams despite his inefficiencies. He was excellent. Jordan Poole, he's Jordan Poole. He's okay. Nothing special. Do the Pelicans keep that group together? Is that enough? Is that going to support Zion and Trey Murphy and Herb Jones and Sadiq Bey, some of these wings and forwards you have? Look, Joe Dumars, he was interviewed this week by NOLA.com, and boy, like, he has what he said publicly supports what I reported privately on this podcast a few weeks ago in regards to the Trey Murphy trade rumors, where I said on my show that the Pelicans believe they're going to compete next year. And Joe Dumars said, on the record, I think if we are healthy, we have a good roster. I believe in the players we have, but two things can be true at the same time. You can believe in your roster and you can continue to look to get better. So that's what I'm doing. I believe in the roster, but I'm still looking for us to get better. That's the piece, that last line. I believe in this roster, but I'm still looking for us to get better. That leads to my third question here about the Pelicans, the third thing to watch. Are the Pelicans actually looking to make a big move? All summer, the conversation has been about who's going to go get Trey Murphy. They want four first-round picks. They want three first-round draft picks. Is somebody going to go pluck away Herb Jones? The conversation has been about, will the Pelicans trade away a player to get into the first round? Joe Dumars said in the same interview that the price was too high to move into the first round. So he resisted all these offers to sell. Could Joe Dumars actually buy? Is that something to monitor this year with the Pelicans? They have all of their future first round draft picks, and they have the swap rights with the Bucks this year. The Bucks are going to be terrible. And the Pelicans are probably also going to be terrible. So they have swap rights for a good chance to move up in a flattened lottery. Maybe New Orleans ends up with the number one, number two, number three pick, or a good chance at one of those picks. And maybe they trade it. Maybe they're actually looking to add. Because if Joe Dumars is this delusional about the roster, I think there's a real chance that we see New Orleans as buyers as I think it's ridiculous. I think it's kind of dumb. For being totally honest about New Orleans, this is a team that I think Zion Williamson, if healthy, he just played 60 plus games. Trey Murphy played over 60 games. I mean, what? Like, I know 60 is not a lot, but are you really expecting Zion to get to 70 plus? Even healthy players don't often get to 75 plus games. So I don't know what more you can ask for. The team was terrible last year, even with good health. But maybe let's, you know, circling back to that stat I said earlier, plus 5.3 with Zion and Trey Murphy on the floor without Derek Queen. Maybe this is the year with a new coach brought in. No new players, really, but a new coach. Maybe we see something shuffled and New Orleans becomes a bit more competitive. We'll be right back. All right, moving on to some other stuff that was in the news this weekend. Ben Simmons is a full participant in Australian basketball minicamp. Yes, Ben Simmons is trying to make another comeback. He still shoots with the wrong hand. He has not switched to his natural right shooting hand. He still shoots bricks off the rim with the left. But I hope he's healthy. I'd love to see Ben Simmons back in the NBA as a small ball five, because I thought the way he played, we last saw him in the NBA in the 24-25 season with the Clippers, he actually was embracing playing as a backup behind Zubats with the Clippers. He was doing the small ball five facilitation stuff that I wish he did years ago in both Philly and in Brooklyn. And he's now embracing it. He's just not the same defensive player he was in his prime. He still looks like he's in his own head offensively. Like something changed when he passed up that layup against the Atlanta Hawks in the second round of the playoffs. Something flipped in him mentally when that happened. But look, if he's healthy defensively and he could provide switchability on defense and help facilitate, add some, you know, lubrication to a half court offense, I think Ben Simmons still could offer something, and I'm hopeful that he can show that with the Australian team this summer, because, hey, it'd be cool to have Ben Simmons as a comeback story to monitor. The Wolves, they're in France. Rudy Gobert organized a whole trip for the entire roster to be out there in France, and we saw some clips of Anthony Edwards and some of the other players joking around and all that. I think this is encouraging. I think for Minnesota, if you're looking at the top contenders in the NBA, are they on the level of the San Antonio Spurs or the Oklahoma City Thunder? No. But can they become that? I think they can become that. I do. I genuinely do. I think with LaMelo Ball there, he's just going to raise the ceiling of Anthony Edwards in ways that maybe we don't quite understand yet with the type of shooter from three-point range Anthony Edwards has become, both off of movement and from a standstill, never mind off the dribble. I think Ant has potential to be maybe the best shooter in basketball when you combined off the dribble and off the catch. And I'm not talking about post-Steph Curry. I'm not talking about when Steph Curry is still in the league. But I think Ant has just ridiculous upside. And having a playmaker of LaMelo Ball's caliber can really raise his ceiling. And so I'm bullish on the Wolves. And I'm especially bullish because I see this team building chemistry with an overseas trip. I think that's a good sign. Next up, Don Nelson, NBA legend, has passed away at 86 years old. Rest in peace to Don Nelson. Obviously, I'm too young to have watched him with the 60 Celtics, five-time champion, too young to have even experienced the Run TMC days with the Warriors, Nelly Ball, Nelly Ball in the 80s with the Bucks as well. Like, I think like so much of what he did as an innovator, as a coach, came before I was born or when I was just a baby. But undeniably, you look at the innovative coaches in NBA history, Nelly Ball in the 80s and into the 90s. Paul Pressey was one of the league's first point forwards. I remember when Phil Pressey, Paul Pressey's son, was with the Boston Celtics, talking to my dad about how Paul Pressey was this bigger ball handler in the 80s with the Bucks, and he had like 6-7 assists per game. And that was kind of ahead of its time to use a guy in that role in that era of basketball. And then in the 90s, of course, with Run TMC, Tim Hardaway, Mitch Richmond, Chris Mullin. Those Warriors teams played fast, up and down, three-point shooting teams. It was, you know, came decades before the Golden State Warriors became the Golden State Warriors. But it's kind of cool how he really, you know, pushed the envelope of the game of basketball, really tied to the way he played in the 60s with those fast-paced, up and down Celtics teams in the 60s, bringing it back in the 80s and the 90s. And I mean, the fact is like, that's innovation. And then drafting Dirk Nowitzki and Steve Nash in 1998 when he was the Mavericks GM and coach taking the shot on Dirk at a time where international players were not viewed as potential franchise cornerstones, and he made Dirk into that. And then he pushed the Warriors to draft Stephen Curry in 2009 when he was the head coach of the team. Look, man, I mean, Don Nelson is an absolute NBA legend, one of the greatest coaches we've had in the history of basketball, one of the greatest figures in the history of basketball. So wish him a rest of peace and condolences to his entire family. Last thing on the Warriors, Monte Poole, Warriors writer at NBC Bay Area, wrote last week about how this is viewed as a gap year for the Warriors. And that phrasing, gap year, really infuriated a lot of Warriors fans, and rightfully so, because didn't we just see a gap year? What was 37 and 45? What was that? Is that not a gap year? Is that a lost year and then this is a gap year? I don't understand how last year wasn't a gap year, but now this is the gap year, the first one since they had the James Wiseman year when Stephen Curry was hurt. It makes no sense to me, and this isn't against Monte Poole or anything like that. It's against what he's writing about is from the Warriors front office view. From their viewpoint, this is a gap year. Stephen Curry's in his late 30s. He's not getting any younger. Draymond Green signed a one-year deal. Very clearly to me, this Warriors front office, all of their actions, have said it 100 times, have said it for 2 years now. They're not prioritizing the present. They're not. It's just not. We're not in a gap year for the Warriors. We are not in a gap year. We are in a gap era of Golden State Warriors basketball. That's what we're in right now. They're not prioritizing winning with Stephen Curry, who remains one of the game's best players. They're not prioritizing winning with Draymond Green. That's why they signed him to a one-year deal. That's why they could still trade him this year. They're not trying to win with Jimmy Butler, who might miss the entire season as he recovers from a torn ACL. They're building for the future. And so if Draymond wants to stick around and Steph Curry wants to stick around and finish their career out with the Golden State Warriors, good by them. Like, I think it would be a beautiful thing to see those guys ride off into the sunset together. We so rarely ever get that nowadays. Players spending their entire career with one franchise. Like, it already feels kind of weird to see Giannis in a Heat uniform. I think he feels weird in it. You can just see the way he talks about it when he does those Twitch streams and all that. Like, it seems kind of weird for him. And it would be weird seeing Stephen Curry wearing his dad's number 30 in Charlotte. It would be weird, even though it'd be kind of cool. It'd be weird to see him in San Antonio with Wemby. It'd be weird, even if he's winning. But it also means you're winning and you're competing and you're building your legacy. So, look, man, I feel very split on it for a guy like Stephen Curry in particular in Golden State. I'd rather see him move on than waste these years. There have already been enough wasted years with this two-timeline plan that was completely botched by the Warriors, and I was supportive of the two-timeline plan. I think it made sense to add young players, but they just whiffed on the picks. They fumbled the opportunity. And now they're in this spot where they have all their picks. They have an injured star, an injured role player in Moses Moody. I just think it's disappointing that this is the way it's going to end for Stephen Curry unless he decides to go gap year. Be serious. Doesn't make any sense. We'll be back again on Thursday. We get some guests on Thursday's show. The NBA schedule will be released this week. This week on Tuesday and Wednesday, the NBA is going to start trickling out some of the big games. I'm assuming some of the national TV games is what we're going to see on Tuesday and Wednesday. And then on Thursday, the full schedule is coming out, and I'm going to have a full reaction show to that schedule. We're also going to continue my NBA entertainment rankings as well with some of the upcoming teams. Could be a surprise in this next group, but I'm looking forward to continuing that on Thursday. Enjoy your week, everybody. Have a good one.